The University of Detroit Mercy presents another brand new episode of Ask the Professor. Today's program was recorded using Zoom video conferencing technology.
University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. He just is always angry. It's Professor Jeff Boats.
That's my secret. That's my but before I go Jeff Smash, you know, I have to let myself get angry.
I tried so hard to turn it into the movie Avengers version. It's like, and this is his secret. He's always angry.
Yeah, I got the Iron Man beard. I should be Iron Man if we're going to be the Avengers.
You should be billionaire, philanthropist, playboy.
Yeah. I can do the math, Jarvis.
Actually, you are looking more Vision-like than ever before. I mean,
yeah, I got to learn how to front light. This is my guest room office, right? And I've got a couple of side lamps on the side of me, and they make me glow orange for some reason.
Yeah, you look like you're in the red light district.
Give me a few hours.
Or you've got a really unusual case of jaundice. One of
yes, yes.
That's my condition.
Oh, a preponderance of heme in your facial.
I'm just using too much of that fake tanner, you know.
That's right.
Very Trumpy.
Continuing around the horn, Professor Mara Livesey is here with us today.
Hello, hello.
Hello, how are you? How'd the week wrap up?
Oh, just great. You know what? I submitted my very first paper as a professor.
Woohoo! Congratulations.
It might get rejected, but at least I submitted it.
Yep. Yes, 100%. That's what matters. That's awesome.
Yay.
Hey, is your laboratory wrapped up by now?
So yes and no. This week and next week, all we're doing is final presentations. So the students have to give like a conference style professional presentation to everyone.
Cool. Very cool.
So Mara, I got to ask, this paper, is it paper or a PDF paper?
I hand wrote it and mailed it.
Ooh.
No, they have these online submission systems.
Okay. I just want to make sure how many trees you killed in submitting this, that's all.
As many as possible.
Exactly.
I chiseled my first paper in stone, but then I'm much older.
That's right.
Paying not much to the ancient Greek mathematicians, too. So.
You paid the little bird to do it, like on the Flintstones.
It's a living.
Professor Beth Oljar is also here with us today.
I remember when I submitted my first article for publication, and it was really cool, so... It's even more cool when you get the, we've accepted your paper for publication, but even if you don't, you know, it's an important hurdle to clear, it seems to me. So yay on you.
Beth, thanks. In the digital age, can a philosophy professor expect to hear back on a different timetable than when you would have submitted something in graduate school? Just, would it be faster?
I'm not sure. The, you know, doing things digitally is what makes a difference. I think it just depends on the journal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Depends on the journal.
We have as reviewers. So.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Makes sense. And of course, somebody who agreed with that is Professor Jim Tubbs.
Hello. Hello.
Depends on the journal. Those are always the scary words. Like depends on what journal you send it to.
And we have really low acceptance rates in philosophy for articles in our journals.
So. Sure.
Oh, interesting.
And who the reviewers are. Some take longer than others.
Of course.
Me, for instance, when I'm reviewing other people's stuff. Although they usually, typically they'll give you a debt. When you're asked to do a review, they'll tell you when they would like to be able to get the
right
back. It's just not everybody gets it back in time.
Right. So you're making a connection, Jim, to anything that you would have published in perhaps ethics or something in religious studies, it would be the same?
Yeah,
takes time.
Same sort of pattern.
I always tell my students it took me 6 months once for a very short paper to get back a, and I wish I was joking. I have it somewhere actually in a frame. Looks good is what I got back. And I'm like, not helpful, not helpful.
Not helpful at all.
You chose the right font. You didn't publish in Comic Sans, right?
No, I did not.
Accepted for publication, revise and resubmit. I mean, At least get me a category that matters.
Exactly.
My dissertation director was sort of the platonic ideal of a dissertation director. He was great, but he had these little statements that he would make every once in a while. And I remember one of them that particularly struck me as funny was, "Your writing style is clear and serviceable."
Serviceable. Wow.
What does that mean? Make it clear. Go with
that's confusing.
Serviceable.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Well, there's actually something to be said for somebody writing so clearly that you can tell upon first reading whether you disagree with them and why.
Oh, he meant it as a compliment.
Yeah, exactly.
But I just thought it was funny.
But it's. I know he means it as a compliment, but that's just not exactly one of those words that connotes, you know.
It'll do, right? It sounds it'll do.
Not exactly elegant.
Right, exactly.
You didn't have any typos on the first page, Jim. Good job.
You have to make the smart stuff accessible to the rest of us. Good job.
Yeah.
Professor Dan Maggio has joined us. For a second, it looked like he was in some sort of railway station, but now he's in his modest studio apartment.
His lovely loft.
His hip cool.
Yes, I just blinked my eyes and I'm home. Hi, everybody. Sorry I'm late.
You're doing fine, Dan.
Times? Did I do? Yeah, that's what I did.
How have things been, Dan?
It's been a busy week, but pretty good.
Good.
I was going to ask Dave what his thoughts are on Comic Sans font.
Don't be a font Nazi. I'm tired of the font Nazi.
Oh, what is it? It's like one of those new fonts that every grandmother has on a word processor, and everyone thinks it's the coolest, hippest thing. I'm like, ugh. It's just a bad trend. That's all.
What's your favorite font, Dave?
Chow Demibold, of course. I can do my own lettering. I don't, you know.
Oh. So.
Okay. Is that a real font name?
No. No,
it's
honestly,
Dave font.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's almost like choosing a favorite color. I try not to, because on certain documents, you know, you need to be more formal. Certain documents, you need to be a little bit more flippant.
That's right.
There's display fonts, scripts, text. You know, there's all kinds of different things. That's all. It's like asking Matt and Mara, like, what's your favorite chemical? You know, I mean.
So many to choose from.
Exactly.
Estrogen.
Makes sense to me. I was going to say sodium chloride, but now you've just...
Or like asking me my favorite vice.
Go on, Jim.
Wait, let me rephrase. Ethanol.
Okay, there we go. All right.
This is a family show. Come on.
Now, there's an idea everyone can enjoy. Yeah, I feel like I still need to introduce Professor Dave Chow, but he's kind of, you know, done it to himself.
I know. Pleasure to be here, as always.
Excellent. Hey, folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. If you don't stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or you could listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Okay, we've got a set of questions here. Dear profs, just like to point out that these are dated 29th of January, 2021, so they're a little bit old. Dear profs, we've had so much snow in the past few days that our plow guys had to dig us out twice. That means we'd have plenty of time to think up more questions for you all. Here are 10 about comic strips. I'm expecting Professor Chow will ace this quiz, so I'm setting a solid 80% as the bar. We hope you think they're fun. Your friends in Munising, Marilyn Bichorik and family. Thanks for sending these in, Marilyn. That's great. Marilyn's always good with a little side fact for every one of these, so we'll see what we can do here. Fritz and Hans are characters from what comic strip?
The Cats and Jammer Kids.
That's right. The longest running American comic strip, first published in 1897 and still in syndication in 2021. That is some legacy right there.
Well, then I was dead wrong when I thought The Phantom was the longest running comic. Apparently not. Mm.
They have to, Dave, they had to have cloned the original artist several times by this point.
They hand it off to their children and other people already, that's all.
That's so wild. Of course, I've never subscribed to a newspaper that's actually shown that strip, but I know of its existence. So.
I've never seen it. Not in Detroit.
Yeah.
Not in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in Detroit.
The main characters in which strip bear the names of two 16th century philosophers?
Calvin and Hobbes.
Calvin and Hobbes, absolutely. Although, does anybody remember what year it was that was the last strip, new strip published?
91?
Wow. Yeah, maybe 90s.
A little bit later.
2002?
No, it was 1995, showing Calvin and Hobbes standing at the top of a fresh snowy hill. A new year, a fresh clean start, let's go exploring. We miss them very, very much. Hmm. Although if you're paying attention, Bill Watterson has come out of his cave a few times since then to do some guest drawings for other strips, and you can catch him every once in a while. Including, do I have this right, Dave? There was like a big exhibition at Ohio State, I want to say, of all of his stuff for a long time.
That or Pennsylvania, one of the two. I can't remember one of them.
So. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I've always been surprised. Now, he's one guy that's never like jumped onto the merchandising train.
That's right. That's right.
So no Calvin dolls, no Hobbes dolls, none of that stuff. I'm like, he could be rolling in it. So, I mean, it's his call. I respect that.
What was the first comic strip in which the characters aged in real time instead of remaining the same age?
Blondie with the kids?
For better or for worse?
No, it wasn't either of those. At least that's not what it says here. Right. There is a very famous bar in Royal Oak, downtown Royal Oak, that has the same name as the strip minus one letter.
Swap. Gasoline Alley?
Yeah, it's Gasoline Alley. That was in the Detroit papers for a while, actually.
Yeah.
Skeezix was born, it says, in 1921, and when World War II broke out, he was old enough to enlist, and they actually continued with that motif. That's a solid hand-drawn soap opera there. Holy smokes. I don't know how someone sets out to do that from the beginning. Big Boy, a fictionalized version of Al Capone, was the first featured villain in what strip?
Dick Tracy, right?
Dick Tracy. A lot of great villains in Dick Tracy. Most had a few, some kind of unusual characteristics. Prune face, flat top, breathless Mahoney, Mumbles, just to name a few.
Not to mention he was also the first to wear that yellow trench that still, iconic during the inauguration this year. So
that's right. That's exactly correct.
What a great looking color for a trench,
Oh my gosh. It's absolutely gorgeous. So do you do any in your classes, Dave? Did you ever do any like paneling like that, like full inking and paneling?
I've edited 6 comic books for students already. I've gotten a couple launched already. So
wow,
I've done that. So
very cool.
It's a living.
How about Mystery Man? Basil St. John was the longtime love interest of the title character from what strip?
Like Brenda Starr.
Brenda Starr. Yeah, it was Brenda Starr. Very well done. Brenda Starr, comma, reporter. Yes, Brenda Starr. Brenda and Basil finally married in 1976. And soon after their daughter was born, unfortunately, they divorced. There's another.
Now if they were to do a modern day version, it would be like Brenda Starr, influencer or something like that? Or
probably, yeah. Influencer. Professional content sharer. And that's just straight up a couple of the YouTubers I follow. That's the way they code themselves. I'm just putting it out there. That's
professional content sharer.
Which comic strip brought readers to tears when Farley passed away?
For better or for worse, the dog?
That's for better or for worse, yes. 14-year-old Farley the sheepdog died after rescuing his owner, April, from a cold river. Fans were devastated. And considering, I think I've mentioned this before, I basically learned to read by reading the comics daily and, of course, on the weekends growing up. For better or for worse is very interesting story. It was a husband and wife team, if I remember correctly. Dave, do I have that right? And then they actually broke up several years into the strip. And so whoever won, I don't remember who it was, the rights rebooted the strip with the same character slightly younger and then continued telling stories. Very interesting. After a 25-year strip, they rebooted the entire cast. So it was really interesting.
I have no idea how like Charles Schulz did for all those many years. It's like, wrote and drew and inked every one of them.
Yeah.
The man's a machine.
That's a lot.
You're listening to a special edition of Ask the Professor, in which each of the seven professors participating in this recording session were connecting to each other from different locations, thanks to Zoom video conferencing technology. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's show, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
And we've got questions from up in Munising, Marilyn Bichorek and family. Who fought his enemies with a singing sword and married the Queen of the Misty Isles?
Prince Valiant?
Prince Valiant, yes. Prince Valiant. Val wooed and eventually won the hand of the beautiful Alita. They had five children, including the mischievous twins Karen and Valita. And always makes me smile. Prince Valiant has been in the Detroit Free Press.
Still going.
Before I was born. And that was the only strip, for whatever reason, that my third grade educated Italian grandfather read. He would go into the paper, read Prince Valiant, and leave all the rest behind. I always thought that was interesting. Like, do you not get the humor from the other ones? Like, hey, Charlie Brown's pretty innocuous. You know, I mean, come on.
My grandmother used to read Nancy and laugh. How? You know, I don't know.
You didn't expect her to laugh? Is that the problem?
I liked Kathy. I like the comic strip Kathy.
Oh, Kathy and Nancy are very different.
Kind of feminist. What, in its
Jim, are you talking about Nancy and Sluggo, that Nancy?
Yes.
Yeah.
But Kathy, I want to say Kathy's still around, Beth.
Probably. Just,
you know, yeah.
Not, Mickey Kaiser is from here, so.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Nancy, just to let you know, Jim, Nancy goes strong. I read Nancy this morning. I don't know if they're rehashes or brand new, but yeah.
I hope they're new.
It says here, Aaron Hill was whose elusive crush through elementary and junior high?
Archie? No. Mm-mm. Aaron Hill.
Aaron. This is a strip that I grew up with, actually, and still goes to this day.
Oh, what is...
Starts with the letter L. It's a female Luann? Name.
Luann?
It's Luann. Luann, yes.
I still read that one.
Yep.
Sometimes.
They, they're in, relatively speaking, they're in college now, so they sort of have grown up. It says Aaron eventually moved away to Hawaii. So Luann had to get over her crush. Interesting. I wonder how you make these story choices when you're making one of these strips. In which strip did the Dragon Lady start as an enemy and later during World War II became an ally?
Flash Gordon?
It's not what it says here.
It's got to be one of those, isn't it?
Superman?
John Carter. Mm-mm. Dragon Lady. Nope. Oh, crud. I think. Buck Rogers?
Nope.
Modesty Blaze.
Nope. Good.
Doggone it.
I like how we're definitely digging into the depths of old strips. No, this one, I've heard of it before, but I don't know if I've ever seen it. It's called Terry and the Pirates.
Okay.
Terry was a teenager when the series begins. Over the years, he matured, joined the army, became a pilot. After the war, he worked for the government. Yep.
Terry and the Pirates is mentioned as one of the influences on Johnny Quest later on.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sounds like the name of a Monty Python movie, though.
It does. It really does. There were two Terrys in Monty Python, so it says double the meaning, right?
Terry Jones, Terry Gilliam. Yep.
Okay, one more. We had 10 questions, and I think we did pretty dang well with all of these here. This single panel strip featured scientists, insects, cavemen, and always talking dogs, snakes, and bears.
Far Side.
The Far Side, yes.
It's the only comic I've ever read. So I was waiting for the Far Side question.
There you go. And I know you know this then, Dan. To the dismay of fans, of course, Gary Larson retired also in 1995. But in the last 3 or 4 years, has started publishing sort of random new strips like all over the United States. So you got to go and like try to find him again.
Well, the Far Side gave rise to some other similar, you know, one frame
Bizarro.
One of my favorites pictured a classroom of vultures. A teacher vulture was sitting at her desk. All these other little vultures were sitting at the seat. And the teacher is saying, okay, class, you've been circling your prey for 3 days now, and it just will not die. What is your position, ethically speaking?
Do you know the title? Do you know the title of that strip?
I can't remember. I used it in a class one. I used it on a syllabus one time in the past, but I can't remember.
Sounds like a Bizarro. Yeah, Dan Peraro did that. That sounds like something he would do.
It was a good one. It was a good Dan one. Peraro.
You dive bomb the prey.
You could probably credit The Far Side as being like an influence on what nowadays we would call a meme. You know, these one panel jokes that you just look at.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The things he would think of, though, because one of my favorites was, you know, he always had that woman with the stacked up hair. Mm-hmm. It was a bun on top of a bun and the glasses that came out like this. She was sitting in the passenger seat of a car looking in her rearview mirror on the outside, which, of course, at the bottom, it says objects in mirror are closer than they appear. And all you can see is an eyeball with the veins in the picture.
Yeah, he's definitely a warped man. That's all. Definitely warped.
He brought people a lot of joy. It's definitely an interesting medium. What can I say? I can't say that there's any like particular arc that I'm following right now in the strips, but in general, aside from here and there, I don't know if I've ever stopped reading the cartoons inside the Free Press since I was, you know, able to read. So it's kind of interesting. It used to be two full pages, black and white facing, and now it's basically down to just one, and that's being generous.
Yeah.
Thanks for those questions, Marilyn. That was pretty awesome. Quick trip down memory lane for comic strip people. And considering memories, look what I have here. Seems to be, you can't see it because of the stupid green screen. Well, I'll read it to you. Dear Matt and profs, forgive the delayed response and lack of correspondence over the last few months. We've been surviving the pandemic quite well and hope that everyone there has been safe. We're still finalizing our next set of questions, but we've come up with a list of 20 imponderables to ask the professors at the end of the show weekly. Please enjoy and rest assured the family Burrows will be sending a new batch of questions soon. Warmest greetings as always, Frank and the Burrows family from Valencia, California. So we have our new set of favorite.
20, you said?
Imponderables.
Imponderables. I think that... we will do what we're supposed to do and do only one or two of these a week, depending on need. This is a pretty interesting place to start, too. What's your favorite charitable cause? Could be a little bit personal, but if you're willing to volunteer that information, that'd be okay.
I used to do fundraisers for Children's Leukemia Foundation.
Awesome.
That was a big deal for me.
I'm on the Dave Chow Retirement Fund. Just doesn't sound so charitable anymore.
At the moment, I'm Covenant House is kind of at the
top. Oh, yeah.
I've donated to various, like the Southern Poverty Law Center and Amnesty International and
awesome
stuff like that.
Yeah, Audubon Society, NPR, PBS, Southern Poverty as well, ACLU. Does that count as a?
Yeah, I would say that.
And there's a long list. I like anything especially like local efforts,
right?
Yeah. Local businesses, local arts.
How about you, Mara?
Most of mine are local, similar to what Dan said. The Michigan Liberation is one place I donate. Mm-hmm. They do kind of criminal justice reform, and then Detroit Disability Power, which does kind of reform for people with disabilities.
Yep, nice. I'm trying to think of the stuff on the Mayo family side, and a lot of it comes back to stuff that the kids find, which I think is cool, like Mittens for Michigan. A lot of these celebrities that come and make their movie or their show, they get kind of entranced by Metro Detroit, which is cool. And then they want to do better. There was a very short-lived true crime series called Low Winter Sun, and a number of those people still come back every winter. Sort of like the Heat Fund, you know, for DTE and stuff like that. And they want to make sure that everybody has the winter PPE that they need to survive the cold weather. So kind of cool. My middle son has gotten into lately, are you ready? Bring all of your old plastic shopping bags. And there's a way that you can kind of comb them to turn them into strands and then therefore yarn. And then you can use them to make all sorts of hats and gloves and things like that.
So, how many bags does he need?
Yeah.
Tell you. Come over to my basement.
Yeah, come on over if you can find my basement. So
my utility room, yes.
It's, you know, speaking of Detroit, there's apparently on HGTV, there's a house renovation show called Bargain Block.
That's right.
Yes.
Where they're renovating homes in Detroit. And Drew and
those two guys are hilarious.
Yeah. Are they a couple or are they just...
They're a couple, I think. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And they walk down the street with a shopping cart, you know, from one house to another.
Right, right. But they basically did as much as they could of an entire neighborhood through the season. It looks like it's going to be a pretty interesting show to watch.
Really?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Check it out.
One more with our last couple minutes that we have left here. And now we're getting laser focused because I think that Frank really worked on these. I think this is great.
Laser
your
focus.
Favorite Tom Hanks movie, specifically Tom Hanks movie.
Houston, we have a problem.
I'll start because it never would have been when I first saw it. But I don't think I ever stop watching when I'm clicking around and I come across Catch Me If You Can. That is one of the most entertaining movies I've
ever seen. That is a good one. Yes.
It's a good one.
I'm with Jeff on Apollo 13 or Saving Private Ryan. I mean.
Yep.
Oh, I thought Jeff meant Houston, we have a problem. I can't give you a good answer.
No. I was watching Apollo 13 in a Pittsburgh movie theater when they got to the line, "You just made going to the moon seem like a trip to Pittsburgh." Everybody busted out laughing so hard in the theater.
I was just thinking Big made a huge
impression. Big was okay.
A long, long time ago. I think it was the first Tom Hanks movie I saw. That's why.
Sure, sure.
Castaway, maybe. Yeah.
I like the way he channeled a kid in Big. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember Bachelor Party?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord, with the mule.
That's an old, Jim, of all the things to remember, you remember the mule.
What about Philadelphia?
That's what I was just going to say. Philadelphia.
I think that's my favorite.
He lost so
much weight to make that movie.
It was an amazing movie.
He won the Oscar for the song that he
wrote. Right.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Well, no, that was a tremendous job of acting in that.
And then there's Forrest Gump.
Forrest
Gump.
I've never seen that movie all the way through.
What?
I've seen parts. I've probably seen the whole movie, just never all at once.
In one sitting, right?
I don't understand the attraction of that movie. I never got it. Yeah.
I think what it is, it's just kind of like, it's an interesting timeline for those of us who lived through chunks of it.
Yeah.
Very interesting timeline.
Oh my. Well, props. I think we've kicked off the list of imponderables very, very well. I'm afraid to say the time has come to say goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye.
Dave.
See ya.
Jim.
Goodbye.
Beth.
You can always ponder the imponderables.
Absolutely. Mara.
Goodbye.
Jeff.
Later.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.